And then and we left off at paragraph 4, where it says one of the most difficult temptations to recognize is that to doubt a healing because of the appearance of continuing symptoms is a mistake in the form of a lack of trust. So if I doubt that a situation has been healed because it looks like the symptoms are still continuing, that's a mistake. It's a lack of trust. And that happens a lot. It's like the minute we try to heal or the minute we try to apply the truth to something, if we don't instantaneously see the result, then we don't think the healing has happened. And this, to me, it's sort of like if you have a rash or something and you go to the doctor and they give you a shot, the rash doesn't instantly disappear. It disappears over a period of time. So you've actually had the healing and you walk out of the doctor's office feeling confident that you've been healed, even though you still look like you got the rash on you. And that's what I think happens a lot with the Course or any truth teaching, is that we'll start implementing the new ideas in our minds, but then think it's not working because we don't see immediately everything in our experience change. So that's what he says, you know, that's a lack of trust if we doubt the healing because the symptoms still continue. He says that's really an attack. And so it usually seems to be just the opposite. It does appear unreasonable at first to be told, this was the first time I read this, it blew me away, continued concern is attack. It's like it seems unreasonable to be told that if you stay continually concerned about a person or a situation, you're really no longer expressing love or healing it in that situation. Hey, there's just an attack happening in that situation. And then he says it looks like love, but how could it really be love if there isn't any trust involved? He says, so it's, if you're doubting, you cannot trust and doubt at the same time. So if I'm doubting, I'm not trusting. And love goes with trust. Love doesn't go with doubt. So if I think I've given it to the Holy Spirit, or if I think I've applied the truth and I doubt the healing because of continuing symptoms, then I am expressing a lack of trust. So I'm not really applying the truth at the point that I'm still continually concerned. We do that a lot, I think, with our loved ones. We think somehow or another we're showing our love because we're continually projecting fear into their experience. But we're calling that fear our concern for them. And all we're doing is they're surrounding them with all the possibilities of what could go wrong for them. And we see it as being loving. But the truth is, that's not loving at all. What you're really projecting out for that person is some kind of a lack or some kind of a fear or some kind of attack. So he says hate must be the opposite of love, regardless of the form it takes. He says, doubt not the gift, and it's impossible to doubt its results. This is the certainty that gives God's teachers the power to be miracle workers. So what gives us the power to be miracle workers is that we put our trust in God. Again, you know, one cool thing about having shared this over 25 years is that what I find is the most frightening aspect, one of the most frightening aspects of the Course, is that it actually asks you to live your life as if there really is a God, and that God actually exists, and that this power can actually heal things and handle things. So the more we're being asked to trust things beyond what we can see and do, the more frightened our ego becomes. So that's why generally classes or workshops that has to do with, like Course says, strengthening the ego, like really just telling you all the things that your ego thinks it can do, those types of classes are usually very big and very well attended, because to the person you're telling them how they can handle everything on their own. But the whole purpose of the Course in Miracles is to get us in touch with the idea that we're not alone, that we do have help, and that we do have invisible support. So it's a whole nother level of mind training that's happening than going to a how-to class about how you at an ego level can make $1,000 more a week. You know what I'm saying? Or how you at an ego level can go out and get you a soulmate through changing something about your appearance and your personality and the way that you look. So things that have to do with trusting the higher power are the things that bring up the most fear in at the ego level, because let's face it, you know, we've been programmed, like Course says, we've been programmed to believe that we should place reliance on ourselves alone, and that the more you place reliance on yourself alone, then the more mature you are, the more capable you are, the better person you are. So in most cases, people are looking for things that they can do alone on their own, And this is saying, no, actually what I want to do is help you remove the blocks to the awareness of your higher power and your own inner guidance that it calls the Holy Spirit, so that you can contact that same spirit in the people around you. And that's how the real healing happens, from Holy Spirit to Holy Spirit, or from your real man to your real man. And it's really about bypassing the ego altogether. The ego personality altogether. Which kind of explains why it looks like our ego doesn't ever get direct communication from God. You know, it's like it look like the human self never actually hears that voice, because it's not talking to your ego. It's your ego is what's blocking you from really getting all the answers anyway. So it's like the Course says, I'm not talking to your Islam, and he says, I'm not talking to your ego, I'm talking to you. And that's not the same thing. I'm not interested in your human personality that thinks it's got to figure out the unknown that it doesn't know. You know, that part of you, it's not the part of you where the power was located. That's the part of you that's the reactionary part. That's the part that's always reacting to everything that's happening, but it doesn't really see itself as the creator of it. So that's not really the part the Course is speaking to. It's speaking to the part of you that made up your image to begin with, the part of you that's making up how you see yourself, the part of you that's making up how you interpret and perceive. That's the part the Course is talking to, not the finished product that thinks it's walking around in the world. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's one of the reasons when I watch these classes, it's always real interesting sharing the Course in Miracles, because it is such an affront to the ego. It does take a whole other level of faith and trust to even hang with it, because it is beyond your ego. It's not talking to the part of us that we're used to thinking is in control. Like, it is different to be told that continued concern is attack. You know, because our ego thinks that's how we show our love. It's how concerned we are about everything. So just by saying that, the ego self goes, ugh, because I know how to worry. Now, I don't know how to trust, but I definitely know how to worry. And so what the ego has done is that it makes worry look like it's an attribute of love, so that you can feel good about the fear that you're projecting by saying it's love. In the Course, says that's where it does everything. It takes it, and then it gives it a meaning that the ego can do, and then the ego feels cool. Like the Course says, there is no fear in love. There is no anger in love. There is no jealousy in love, okay? The average person is full of what? Fear, anger, and jealousy in love, or some form of insecurity in love. So I don't know how to not be insecure. I don't know how to not have any jealousy. I don't know how to not have any insecurity at an ego level, right? So what does my ego do? Well, what it does is it includes those things in love. And so now my ego will say, well, if you love somebody, you're jealous. If you love somebody, you will feel insecure. If you love somebody, you will have fear. If you love somebody, you will be angry at them from time to time. See, that's what the Course says, that the separated mind, the ego mind, constantly does that. It takes love or whatever truth is, and then it mixes some untruth with it. Because we can do that. I can do fear. I can do insecurity. So rather than really getting serious enough to let go of my fears and my insecurity, what I'll do is I'll just make fears and insecurity a part of normal reality. Then it becomes okay, so I don't have to change that. I don't really have to deal with that. That's why I believe the idea of sin is so popular. Because if you're born in sin, you can't help it. So if I can't help it, then why should I do something about it? Because I'm just born in sin. I am flawed. So there's no need to change it. But then the Course turns around and says, well, there is no sin. He's just making a mistake. But my mind doesn't like that. A mistake isn't attractive. A mistake is something I can do something about. But a sin is something I can't do anything about. So I understand more and more why the higher you go in consciousness, the more responsibility you take for your experience and the less appeal that has to the ego. That's why the whole victim thought system is much more popular than the one we're on. But if continued concern is attacked, then the Course says, then if you are a miracle worker, then what makes you a miracle worker is that you put your trust in God. He says the real basis for doubt about the outcome of any problem that's been given to the Holy Spirit for resolution is always self-doubt. So if a person has doubt about how something is going to turn out, then what they're really experiencing is self-doubt. And he says that means that you're really trusting in your ego. you're really trusting and you illusory self, because it's only such a self that can be doubted. And he says you can tell when you're touching and you're trusting in your ego and you're not really trusting in spirit, because you have a fear of weakness. If you're trusting in your ego to take care of you, you will have a sense of vulnerability. If you're just trusting in your ego without God to take care of you, you will have a fear of failure. Like, if you even have a fear of failure, the Course says that means that you're looking for your ego to give you your success. That's why you have a fear of failure. You're not putting your trust in God. You're putting your trust in you, separate from God, to be able to do your success. If you have a fear of failure, he says, if you have a shame associated with feeling like you're inadequate, that you putting your trust in your ego. He says, perhaps you have a guilty embarrassment stemming from a false humility. He said, the form of the mistake is not important. What is important is only the recognition of a mistake as a mistake. Most people are concerned about the different kinds of mistakes that they're making. And the Course says, what you really want to be concerned about, really, not really concerned, but aware of, is just when you're making a mistake. It's not about getting caught up in the type of mistake you're making. I just want to know when I'm making a mistake. And what is the mistake? He says, I'll tell you what the mistake is. The mistake is putting your trust in your own ego. The mistake is putting your trust in being liked. The mistake, he says, is putting your trust in knowing the right people. The mistake is putting your trust in money. Your mistake is putting your trust in pills. He says, the mistake that I'm making is I'm putting my trust in everything but my Creator. So it's really a very spiritual approach. It's a very spiritual, metaphysical approach. But the Course is a spiritual book. It's all about our relationship with our Creator. It's not about building our ego's ability to take care of itself up. It's really about surrendering to the part, to whatever it was that created us in the first place, and learning how to get that part of us to function in our experience, or to let it function in our experience. It's not about me figuring out how I'm going to take care of myself. It's about me letting go of the blocks to God taking care of me. That's the difference. So the next paragraph, he says, the mistake is always some form of concern with yourself to the exclusion of the patient, which is the other person. The mistake is I don't recognize you as part of myself. The mistake I'm making is I don't recognize that all of you are part of myself. So that's my confusion in my identity. I don't recognize you as part of myself. That's my mistake. If I recognized everything as part of me, I would be healed. If I recognized everything as part of me, I would be supported. I would be sustained. I would be loved. The mistake I'm making is seeing myself as alone and separate. That's the mistake. So it says, conflict about what you are has entered your mind, which means you become deceived about yourself. You are deceived about yourself because you think you are only yourself. I'm deceived about myself because I think this is all of me. He says that's the self-deception. It's when I think I'm separate from the whole. That is a deception about my identity, because my identity is with all that is. See, everything that it describes as the error is nothing that my ego ever wants to call the error. You know, my ego wants to call the error, if I'm not making enough money, it wants to tell me the social economic conditions that are bringing that about. If I can't get a relationship going, it wants to tell me about the things that's wrong with my personality. Or maybe I'm in the wrong city that I need to do something about. Your ego is going to always point to anything other than if you were really aware that you were one, the perfect relationship would show up. If you were aware you were really one, then whatever you needed to be sustained in this world would be drawn to you. That's where the real being sustained is going to come from. It's going to come from me not being separate from what's taking care of me, and to see myself as one with it. You know, it's like if you're an artist, you have to see yourself as one with the people that you want to buy your painting. Then it's you buying your painting.
Thank you for saying that.
Okay, but if you're looking at it as if it's somebody else that needs to buy your business, then you're reinforcing the idea of separation and really separating yourself from your prosperity. Because I'm seeing the person as an objective person away from me that's not me, rather than understanding that's a part of me, and that part of me, if I see myself as one with it, could see the beauty and appreciate what I'm doing and value that. You see what I mean? You know, what I've always noticed with doing, like doing teaching the Course in Miracles full time for years, there's no correlation between how many people come to my class and how much advertising I do, or how many people come to my class and how many people say they like it. It's who's sent. You know what I'm saying? It's like you have people sent to you who need what you do at the level that you do it. But you also learn how to get communication with yourself so that you know when to begin something, when to end something, when to complete something, when to go to another level. You know, and that's where everybody is. I'm saying this is my last class here at this location today. Okay. any questions about what I've said so far? Because that's been some powerful stuff that's been laid down, even in terms of just clarification or any realizations that you made from hearing that for yourself. Because all of that helps everybody.
I've been going through that very thing you've been talking about since the weekend, because I went to a wedding that had all this anxiety, and it was all those principles you mentioned since I came in. And you mentioned about it, God sustaining us.
Mm-hmm.
The trap I fall into is I get caught up of what that's supposed to look like.
Right. That is the error, always, for all of us. You know, it's like we focus on the how more than we focus on the course we call it the what. Of course, that we should be focusing on the what, but we don't. It's like, okay, if things are slowing down, it looks like it's slowing down, either two things are happening. I've either lost sight of my purpose, or I'm not hearing my guidance about what I should be doing. Because sometimes when you get used to doing things in a certain way, the Course says what happens is the routine becomes a god in itself. And after a while, it becomes an idol. And so you don't want to let go of your routine, even though that routine may have reached a point that it can no longer sustain. Like, for instance, I taught in Memphis for 20 years. In that time, I had, you know, like tremendous amounts of success in doing that. But then there came a period, I had been there all my life, and my inner self was saying, well, now it's time for you to move. I want you, there are other places I want you to go. Hey, I live 5 minutes from where I was teaching. You know what I'm saying? Everything was convenient. Everything was set up. I just walked in there and did my thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like I was used to it, da-da-da-da-da. My routine had become more important than my purpose. My purpose was to teach. My routine was to be 10 minutes from where I live. You see what I mean? And so I wanted the routine more than I wanted the change, I thought. And so Spirit just gave me a really good lesson in the fact that the reason why those people were there had nothing to do with my routine. It had something to do with that was where I was supposed to be at that time doing that, and that was no longer the case. In order to let the content come through, in order to let the support come through, then I had to give myself a different form. And so I was very plainly told to come to Denver. And it was interesting because during that period where I was determined that I was going to make something work like it had always worked, but then everything just stopped. It was like somebody flicked a switch. And the people disappeared, and everything that used to work all of a sudden didn't work. Now, most people would spend all their time going, well, let me see if I can patch this up. Let me see if I can fix this and make it the way it was. And I was like going, now, this is very clear guidance. There's obvious guidance you can get that I need to be somewhere else now. You know, I need to be doing it differently. And I had felt that. So I came to Denver. And I didn't know for sure where I was going to be, where I was going to live, where I was going to teach, but I was told. And when I really trust like that, it's amazing. But within a month of coming here, then, you know, I was literally given a place to live, given a car to drive, given a place to teach, put on the board of the church, given an office. And the classes that I did at Unity Temples, people started to come in. And I was able from the very beginning to take care of myself. What did I do? I followed guidance. I had to let go of my attachment to what appeared to be the form of what was happening and pay attention to the guys. Now, the same thing is beginning to happen again, where I'm beginning to be told, okay, it's time for another shift in the form. Now, you have to prepare yourself for that shift by not being attached to anything that you're doing here, anywhere that you're doing it, you know, and stay open to whatever the next move is. That's what's different between following guidance and the ego, which is always trying to make the impermanent permanent. It's always trying to take some physical situation and make that physical situation not change. So you know, there's no way that you shouldn't be able to be taken care of through your art or through whatever your work is. What may be blocking it is still learn how to remove the blocks to hearing the guidance, which you yourself have said. That sometimes I don't want to do it, I want to hear that. You know what I'm saying? We all do that. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Because our ego is the part of us that feels safer when it looks like things aren't changing. Because the Course says the ego is the part of us that believes that when we change, things are just going to get worse. Or when we change, we're going to lose what we already have. So we can't do it any different because I'm going to lose. What I should be trying to do is hold on to what I got and see if I can build on that. Rather than in some cases knowing that you have to let it go altogether and let a whole new way happen, you know. So, but the biggest error is seeing yourself as being separate from the people you want to serve, and seeing yourself as separate from the people that you want that wants your service, or seeing yourself as separate from the person you want to be in a relationship with, or seeing yourself as separate from the prosperity you want to have. There's money, and then there's Keith. You see what I'm saying? There's prosperity out there, and then there's Earl. And so whenever there seems to be a lack, it's because there's a gap. Of course, there's a gap that we've created between us and it by seeing ourselves as separate from it. Anybody else have any thoughts about what we talked about?
It's so true. It kind of tells you when you have to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
And you can deny it, and you can say, no, I don't really have to make a change. But the universe is abundant.
It really is.
And you can get slapped upside the head. Really, sometimes I think the Holy Spirit is slapping me upside the head saying, make the change. Make the change. And I'm like, no.
Right. The physical level is always the last level. That you get, like I call it, God banging on my hood. You know, spiritually, we can read a book and just say this: well, continued concern is attack, and you should be learning how to focus in on the guidance of the Holy Spirit. People go, oh, that's nice, that's cute, and then we go and do the same thing. Then all of a sudden, mentally, you're thinking, you know, really, I need to change the way I'm seeing things, right? But then, still do the same thing. So all of a sudden, you start feeling it. You're going, this really doesn't feel right. So we're getting the indications at deeper and deeper levels. Now I don't feel good most of the time. Most of the time I don't feel happy. Most of the time I feel incomplete. I'm ignoring that, you know. And then the last level, which is what? It's what you see. Some kind of a physical situation that happens that forces your butt to change. Like, I kept getting the hints. I had been getting the hints for about a year or so, actually. Maybe a little bit longer. And if I had acted on the guidance when I first got it, it would have been actually easier for me to come here. It actually would have been easier for me to make, because I had more resources at my disposal. You see what I'm saying? Because I hadn't spent money trying to beat a dead dog. You know what I'm saying? So I got it in time enough for actually Spirit to help me make an easier transition. But no, I wasn't going to pay attention. Now, Spirit still rescued me, but I could have had a lot less fear and anxiety in the process, you know, by making the move when it was easier for me to make the move, when I had more money saved up, or whatever it was. You see what I mean? So by the time you let it get physical, you also let it get desperate. And so then you scare yourself half to death. You know, you just because you're so stubborn that, you know, Spirit has to, like, give you this, not really Spirit, you yourself give yourself this unbearable situation. Not Spirit, because Spirit was trying to get you out of it in the very beginning. It was you, the one that kept using your truth to convince yourself to stay in it. You know, the ego is good at using metaphysical truth principles to keep you in the same. That's why the Course says the one right use of judgment is your feelings. Because you can tell yourself anything. But if you really be honest with yourself, you know whether you're feeling peace and whether you're feeling depression or conflict. You know. You know, you can tell yourself anything you want to, but you know whether or not you're feeling good and whether you're feeling happy and whether you're feeling content. So don't let all the stuff that you study, you know, don't let your ego use that to keep you in a situation that's not right for you, because the ego will do that. It'll say, well, you know, if you know, this just means you're not trusting God. If you really trust in God, you stick this out. You see what I'm saying? How do you feel? You know, do you really feel inspired? You know, do you feel inspired to stick this out? Do you feel inspired to make this happen? Do you feel inspired? You know, are you so inspired as an artist that you would paint, you know, even if you weren't making a dime, would you paint? You see, that's what I'm saying. If it's really what you love to do, you're going to do it whether you're making any money at it or not. You can even make yourself, I couldn't make myself not teach the course or not share, you know. And that's where it is when it's your purpose, when it's your function, when it's your heart. You can't, so economic conditions are not going to make a real musician stop playing music. You know what I'm saying? Economic conditions are not going to make, you know, if economic conditions make you not do what you really want to do, that's not really what you really want to do. That's not your real love. That's maybe a way you think you can make some money and, you know, enjoy yourself. There's nothing wrong with that. But if it's really from your heart and soul, you almost are compelled to do it. It's almost like you could not do it if you wanted to not do it.
That's true.
And the thing that you feel from that level, if your thing, I remember a young artist, as a matter of fact, told me 30 years ago, I'll never forget this, he said to me, you know, because I was just getting ready to think about wanting to do my own thing, you know, and I was in the corporate world and had all that illusion of security with the Spitz account and the office and the company car and the trips and, you know, and I was miserable. But it looked good. You know, I had the American dream. I even had 2.5 children. I had half a child. And, he was from, you know, hips down, he existed. he was a half a child. And anyway, but I wasn't happy. And a lot of people can relate to that. You can be right in the middle of what the world would call the perfect situation. And nothing about that situation has been as fulfilling as being out here doing my own thing with all the fear that entails for the ego. I wouldn't trade one minute of being on somebody's time clock telling me what I could do things for doing my own thing. Now, some people actually create jobs where they do have a routine and a structure, but they're very happy in it because what they're expressing is something that really means something to them. So I'm not knocking the 9-to-5 thing. I think that one is not any better than the other. All that really matters is that you're happy with what you're doing.
Somebody in this class recommended the book, This Time I Dance.
Yeah, Tamara Keith's book.
Yeah, it was a good book.
Did you get it?
I did.
Yeah. And so that was a good example because I met Tamara when I first came here in 93, and she was just wanting to be a teacher, wanting to be a writer. She was a Harvard-trained lawyer. A family, you know, like, which was very unusual for a woman to get that law degree from Harvard. She was very attractive. Of course, her parents was tripping, you know, but she knew she wanted to teach. She knew she wanted to write. And so I just watched that whole thing birth. And so it's so cool to watch her now with her book out, going out doing her book tours. Because I had a chance to watch that whole thing.
Wow.
From the time she conceived it. And so she would come to my classes and stuff and we really got close because she really got me. And so she was like really wanting to be motivated by my willingness to do my thing, you know. And so that's what I'm saying. Her love for what she wanted to do pulled her beyond what people would think about her giving up her law practice, beyond what her parents said to her. And so I find that what stopped most people is just a very simple thing. It's a lack of courage.
Yeah.
They just don't have any courage. They want some assurances. They want to be assured of every possible dynamic that's going to happen being covered before they step out. And it doesn't work like that. The course when it was first channeled and they asked about how would they get this book published, the inner voice said, "What you do is you make the commitment first." You don't get everything handled and then say, now I'm going to make the commitment because I got everything in place. He said, no, that's not the way it works at all because the universe is operating at the effect level. So first, I have to get committed. Then I see the result of that commitment in my world. It's not that the world is going to prove to me I ought to be committed. So it's a different approach, but it definitely works. And so that's what I'm doing, Keith. It's the same thing you're doing right now. I'm having to, in my mind, tell spirit, okay, what do you want me to do? Where do you want me to go? You know, who do you want me to talk to? You know, because I know it's not your will that I struggle. I know it's not your will that I wonder how I'm going to be taken care of. So if any of those things seem to be happening, then I know I'm not listening. I'm missing something here, and so I won't hear.
I got that this week, and I started feeling the way I was feeling.
Yeah, I'm missing something here. You know, all of a sudden things are shifting. Okay, but they don't necessarily seem that they're shifting in a way that makes me feel more secure. Okay, so then I know your support hasn't left me, God. So what is it that I'm missing? What do I need to do?
Yeah, I don't want to step away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got that.
Yeah. So that's what he says in the next paragraph. He says, and so you are deceived about yourself because you have denied God, the source of your creation. If you are offering only healing, I like that. If you are offering only healing, you cannot doubt. If I know that all I want to give is help, then I can't be doubting about what my purpose is. He says, if you really want the problem solved, you cannot doubt. It doesn't mean you cannot doubt by saying, like, well, you can't doubt. It's like saying, if I really want the problem solved, it'll bring me to a state of mind that I can't doubt in. If I really want that, where's the doubt? You see what I'm saying? Because doubt is coming from me not being certain. That's what doubt is. So he said, well, if you really know what you want, you can't doubt. If I'm sure, you know, and I'm not picking on you, I just like to use it as an example. If I'm sure that I want to be an artist, then I won't have any doubts. Because I'm sure that's what I want. And I'm sure I'm not going to let anything stop that.
That's the commitment.
That's the commitment. If I'm sure what I want, there can be no doubt. If I'm sure that I'm willing to put my trust in my higher power, there cannot be any doubt. There's only doubt if Keith is trusting in Keith to make him a successful artist by himself. So all my doubt is coming from me not trusting my own adequacy to handle the situation. That's where my doubt is coming from. I don't think I'm adequate at some level, or I wouldn't doubt. If I thought I had my act together, I wouldn't doubt. He's saying, well, it's not about putting faith in yourself alone, Earl. It's about putting the faith in something that's greater than you, that knows the people who want your service, that knows the people who can bring all this together, who knows where you should be. There's a greater intelligence than you. And that's what I need to put my faith in. That's one thing I like about the South, is that living in the Bible Belt. Now, the whole heaven and damnation thing, heaven and hell, all that condemnation and judgment, didn't like that. One thing I love, though, is that in general, the people, at least in that where I came from, people really had a belief in, thought they had a belief in God. So they would say stuff, you're like, I'm finna go to the Holy Spirit, I'm gonna pray on this, or let's go to Jesus on this, or let's go to Christ on this, and you know, you can't do it without God, you really gotta do it. You know, you don't hear that out here much. Mm-hmm. You almost never, ever hear anybody make a reference to a higher power. It's like the Wild West mentality.
Unless you're in the 12 step.
Yeah, but look, that's what I'm saying. And look, there's some people who hit the bottom, who reach their limit, thank God. And that's usually the people who do go for the faith. It's the people who reach their limit. But just the general public, I've noticed it in sharing for 5 years. It's very rare that anybody mentions God in a class. Almost never. It's more like, how do I need to see this? How do I need to look at this? What do I need to do? You know, it's always it's almost never, ever, ever, well, I'm going to give this up to God, and how can I bring God more into this, and I need to have more faith, and let's get together and pray on this right now. You know, and that's not a criticism. It's just an observation. It's just, so what I want is the people that want God without the guilt. I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know, just because people got some screwed up ideas about God, I don't want to give up on the idea of God just because the world got screwed up. And that's what I see. That's what it looks like to me. Like it's just, I'm a recovering Baptist, I'm a recovering Catholic, I'm a recovering Methodist. Oh, don't even mention God to me. It's like, no, that's your perception of God that's got you freaking out. You know, don't throw out God just because you brought up Catholic. And you know, then the ego really got you, because now it's just you on your own by yourself trying to do it. And so that's what's been interesting about teaching in the South as opposed to teaching in the West. You know, it's that difference in that willingness to focus on that idea of a Godhead or a God consciousness. And even that's the key to the next level. The key to the next level is getting in touch with a power greater than your own ego. telling you. It's too scary out here trying to be self-employed on your own. You don't be out here doing your own thing, just trying to figure. You know what I'm saying? That's too scary. At least it is to me. I'd much rather feel like I got some backup. He says if you're certain what the problem is, you can't doubt. So he says the reason why you even have doubt is because you have conflicting wishes. So I have doubt. What does that mean? It means I'm not sure what I want. And if I'm not sure what I want, then I'm going to have doubt. So he says doubt becomes impossible when you're sure of what you want. So if you have a lot of doubt in any situation, he says it's because you don't know what you want in that situation. If you got doubt in your marriage, you don't know what you want in your marriage. If you got doubt in your relationship with your kids, well, you don't know what you want in your relationship with your kids. He says if you have doubt, in any area you have doubt, you know, if you, it's because I don't know what I want. I'm not really sure about what I want. So he says if you're sure what you want, it's impossible to doubt. So that was that section. Should healing be repeated?
There's a good line that I learned last night that has to do with that kind of.
What about Anna's class?
Anna's class, mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's
see if I can find it. Where's the BB? Is she still having it at that church?
Yeah, she's still having it at the Miracle Center, yeah.
Miracle Center, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's what Gary Renard's going to be speaking.
I'm going there.
Yeah, I'm sure next time you have even bigger crowd than you did last time.
He's on the Disappearing Universe.
Yeah, he's the one who wrote The Disappearance of the Universe.
It says, your mind and mine can unite in shining your ego away, releasing the strength of God into everything you think and do.
And that's exactly what I was saying earlier. That the Course isn't talking to your ego. Like what he said, your mind and mine can unite to shine your ego. Like the ego is a whole other part of the mind, to shine your ego away. And that's exactly right. We have to join with our higher mind. Yeah. It's real powerful. And then I love it. He says, shine your, and the ego is nothing but fear. He says, so I can shine the fear away. And so sometimes people say, well, you know, you need your ego. Your ego is good. I said, you're thinking about the classic psychological definition of the ego, not the definition of the ego that the Course is talking about. And people get that confused all the time. Well, you know, but the ego is a good thing. You need it out. Well, that's not the Course in Miracles definition of the ego. You're using another definition. The Course in Miracles definition of the ego is the part of you that's afraid. It's the part of you that's afraid. It's the part of you that has fearful thoughts. That's what he says of ego. So it's not the classic Freudian definition of ego. He's saying you don't, like I said, I can shine your fear away. Well, there's nothing wrong with having fear shined away. You know what I mean? You don't have to defend your fear. Well, you need to keep fear. Well, fear is good for you. If you have fear, you know, you walk out right in front of a car. It's like, oh, you wouldn't. It takes awareness not to walk out in front of the car.
Sense.
It takes sense not to walk. I'm not going to walk out in front of the car because I'm afraid it might hit me. That's a stupid reason not to walk out in front of a car. I'm aware that that's not safe for my body, right? So I don't have to be afraid to stay on the curb. But I've heard people say, well, if you weren't afraid, you know, maybe you'd do something really crazy. It's like, no, that's ignorance and fear are the same thing. The exact same thing. What I want is to be so clear and so peaceful that I can make right choices for myself. I don't want fear. Fear immobilizes me. You know? If you had a heart attack right now, would you want somebody trying to help you who was jumping up and down screaming in fear? Or would you want somebody to go, everybody stay calm, open up his collar, let's see if we can give him some breath, step back. That's the person you go, thank God that person's here. You don't want the person. Somehow we think fear is somehow or another. It helps situations. It doesn't. It doesn't help anything. You know, that's why the plane flew into the building. Fear. You know.
It's amazing. I've been in work situations where something happened and fear comes up and I try to be calm and I get accused of apathy and get written up for it. Oh, you're not acting afraid. You don't care.
Mm-hmm. And that's a reflection of your old programming. The reason why that's coming to you is because you still have beliefs about that yourself.
Okay.
And so in the beginning when you try to change your mind or go to a new thought system, then you see the residue of your old beliefs come up in the form of other people presenting you at first with the thoughts you used to believe. So there was a time when you would have thought that was apathy too. You see what I'm saying? There was a time when you would have taken someone seeming like they weren't emotionally involved as not caring. So, the course always goes, you only see the past. That's why lesson seven says, you only see the past. You're only seeing what you learned in the past. So when you see the people around you still come out of those old belief systems, it's not about getting mad about it. It's really about realizing that you're just seeing the past. You're just seeing what you learned in the past. And then it helps you forgive them faster. You know, because if I see myself as different from them, then that's why I get upset with them. You know what I mean? It's like, in other words, I see myself as, well, I'm different from them. And okay, then the more I see myself as different from them, the more they show me the difference I see.
And that misses the whole point of what the Course is trying to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. What if it's the other way around?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my son irritates me to rage because I can't manipulate him. I can't scare him. I can't threaten him. He has an artist's mind. And when I look at him, I think, he's got it. He's got it.
That's the classic what you just said was the classic definition of what we just read. He says, you know, when you're sure of what you want, doubt becomes impossible. He's so sure of what he wants that he's invulnerable to anything that anybody else says to him. You know what I'm saying? He's totally sure of what he wants to do. And so since he knows what he wants to do and he's zeroed in on that, whatever that is, of course nothing that anybody else says to him is going to faze him, because whatever anybody else is saying to him, if it's not something that's helping him achieve his goal, then he knows that's not helpful to him. He knows at a subconscious level that it's only what helps him reach his goal that's really valuable to him. Now, the flip side of that is that sometimes he'll give himself very intense lessons that in some cases, maybe had he listened, he wouldn't have had to go through that. But it's worth it for him in the long run, in terms of the reward he gets from doing what he loves to do every day. And that's the same thing with me. Anybody. Sure, a long time ago, I could have tried to go back and do it the world's way. And it would have sometimes seemed like it's easier. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what my income's going to be from week to week. You know what I mean? But my love of what I want to do will take me past those worries. And then I found out the universe always takes care of me some kind of way. And that's the same thing. That's what I'm saying. I have no doubt that he will, like you were saying about him going out, like, what you going to eat? Don't worry. He's going to eat.
He's not worried.
He's going to eat. I guarantee you that his belief in himself and his belief in what he's doing is going to sustain him.
But when you were talking earlier, you were saying you see things in other people that, I don't know exactly how you two were talking, but...
Seeing the past.
Mm-hmm.
With him, I'm almost seeing where I need to be.
And you're still seeing your past, too. There are things in your life that you feel exactly the way he does. If you were to search your life carefully, you'd uncover them. You already hit you. There are areas in your life that you are just as fixed as he is, that you won't let anybody change the way, maybe even the way you're doing your spiritual path right now. No matter what anybody says, you're still headed in this direction. See, you're doing the same thing. You're just doing it in another form.
Mm-hmm.
But the exact same thing. You know, and you're going to become more like him. But you're going to do it in a way that will probably not bring you as many tough lessons that he'll attract. Because let's face it, there's a lot to be said about how long you've been on the planet in the body. Even though we're in a totally youth-oriented society, they think anybody over 30 is somehow enough lost it. Anybody over 30 knows you don't really know crap under 30. but you can't tell nobody under 30 that, because you was under 30 and you felt the same way. So I don't get into that frustration with my kids. You know what I'm saying? It's like, girl, you know when you were in your 20s, you thought you were immortal, and you thought everybody before you had done it wrong, and you knew the best way to do everything, and everybody else. You know what I'm saying? You know the thought, but you also know when you got over 30, you started to get more in touch with who you were as opposed to what you've been taught. And you begin to realize that the older you get, which is so true, the more you know you don't know. It's just the opposite. The younger you are, the more you think you know. The older you get, the more you know you don't know.
I found myself embracing that.
And that's where your peace is located. See, my peace is in the not knowing. Because if I don't know, then all possibilities exist. If I think I know, then what I mean by know is the how. when I come up with the how, then I'm shutting out all the other ways the answer could get to me, because I've already said it's either going to come this way, or this way. So I come up with my three little alternatives for whatever situation I'm in, right? Okay, this seems like this is my alternative. Even like either I got to do it this way, or I got to do it this way, or I got to do it this way. And these three things are the only ways that I can do it. So what you've done is effectively cut God out of the equation. Probably all three of your solutions don't really turn you on at all, you know, but you're so sure you know that you can't even open your mind up that there could be a fourth way. There could be a way that you have doesn't even cross your mind yet. Or the Spirit could arrange the whole thing that you don't have any sacrifice whatsoever. But I think I know. So, yeah, your son, when you were describing your son's attitude to me, oh yeah, that was what I was going to say. When you said that, you know, no matter how you would try to manipulate him in any way, that's exactly the experience that a person has with a person who is awakening and a person who really practices love and truth. And it drives people who are ego bananas. Like, I think about how many people say they really wish they had a person that was really enlightened. Do you know that a person that was enlightened would make you so mad you'd want to kill them? If you were still in your ego,
I do want to kill him.
Right? That's what. That's right. Because see, because it's only your ego, right, that would want him to do it your way, right? And he's practicing his truth, right?
Yeah.
So what you are experiencing is exactly what a person would experience who stayed in their ego, who did hook up with the person who really was practicing the truth. They wouldn't let them guilt trip him. They wouldn't let them manipulate them. You still do what you really wanted to do. You claim your freedom. And a person who needs to manipulate and control, like the average person does, to feel safe, they stay mad at you all the time and always accuse you of being selfish. I mean, you're going to hear that over and over again. You're just thinking about yourself. You're not really thinking how anybody else thinks. You know, no, the truth is, I'm thinking about all of us, because really, the nicest Earl you could be around is a happy Earl. The nicest Earl you could ever be around is an Earl who feels satisfied in what he's doing in his life. So if I do what makes me happy, I'm making everybody in my family happier. They may not realize it, but I'm one less problem they're going to have. I'm one less person that's all upset all the time. You see what I'm saying? People don't get that. That the greatest thing you can do for the people around you is to be happy yourself, to be peaceful yourself. And the ego mind does it just the opposite. The ego mind goes, if I take care of everybody else first, then after I take care of everybody else, then it's time for me and I can be happy. Huh. That's backwards. But the Course calls it the love is sacrifice trip. You know, the people believe that love is sacrifice. You know, like your son. If he really loved you, he ought to sacrifice going on the road and really do what would make you feel more safe at night and feel more peace, not be worried about him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's not going to do that.
He's not going to do that. Right, right. As a favor to you, as a way to really help you,
right,
he's not going to do that. Because one day you realize that really he's empowering you, mm-hmm, because he's helping you up, because the same thing that happened with him, with you. It'll flip now, see. If it's something you really wanted to do that he didn't want you to do, if it was a way he wanted to manipulate you, he couldn't manipulate you either.
True.
You see? Mm-hmm. So you also being freed up from a lot of sense of obligation to try to act out his scripts. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, hey, you're not going to act out any of my scripts? No problem. But when you come up with the script for me that I don't want to really do, you see what I'm saying, then don't be tripping because I'm not sending you $500 if you need some. You know what I'm saying? Don't be tripping if I'm not sending you the $50 to buy the Big Macs. You know what I'm saying? Okay, you really want to do this, and you want to do it your way, and you don't want any input from me, and okay. All right, then. All right, go for it, brother. I'm with you. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. By the same token, you've been free. He's freeing you, too.
Right.
If you can handle that. You know, and sometimes with parents, it's hard to handle that because we don't want our kids to go through anything painful.
No matter how hard you try to stop it out, it happens if it's meant to happen anyway.
Thank you. Yeah. It's like, who your children inherit the most from? Themselves. Not the parents. They, you know, I came here with my own past and my own spiritual lessons. And they had nothing to do with Joe and Georgia Purdy. None whatsoever. So you're not a bad parent because your kids didn't turn out a certain way. You don't really have any control over that, no way. We've all seen that. We've all seen parents give kids everything, put them in the most I see it all the time. I see so many parents. I've never seen parents more conscious of trying to be good parents as the baby boomers, as they call them, the people born in my generation. And they got the worst kids that ever existed on the face of the earth.
You
make a judgment wrong. That's an observation. I did not grow up in a school where somebody walked up in the school and killed 10 people. Mm-hmm. It did not happen, no time in my childhood, ever. I didn't grow up in a neighborhood where I couldn't go out the yard that I was afraid of being abducted. I didn't see kids around me going in the store, screaming and hollering and going off at their parents and do whatever they wanted them to do. Me personally, I didn't grow up in a reality like that. Yeah, so this whole idea that these kids are somehow better is an illusion to me. Mm-hmm. They just value more stuff. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, and now to me, a judgment would be saying that they're sinful, that they're bad, that they don't deserve to have happiness. To me, that's where I look at judgment. It's like condemning someone. I'm not condemning. I'm just saying I really don't see where. The reason my point in saying it was those kids came here with their own karma and their own lesson. And what the parents are seeing is not so much the result of bad parenting, but just what the soul lessons are those children came here to learn.
God, it's a huge soul lesson for an entire generation.
Yeah, it is an entire generation that has to very quickly find out the futility of the illusion and material things so that they can go to their real power, because the flip side of it is that they're more gifted than any children that's been born so far. Also, see what I'm saying? But the bigger the gift, the bigger the ego. Right? You know, we all seen it. The bigger the genius, the crazier their ego is. The bigger the star, the bigger the... That's what I'm saying. These kids have incredible levels of psychic development and spiritual development, but it's on the other side of a humongous ego. Wow. And so they're being so fed so much sensory stuff that they're gonna see the futility of the illusion quicker than we ever did, because they're getting it all and not happy,
and they know it.
Yeah. And they know it, and they know that they're getting tired of their game in a week after they get it. They're already getting. I'm amazed. Some of the deepest conversations that I've had, deep spiritual conversations that I've had, that I long to have with people, I've had with people under 25. You know, the people who have called me or want to get with me and have the deepest conversations are very seldom ever people my age. Those kids are very, very, very advanced. And they want people to be real, 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 real and honest with them. And we're making them the same kind of errors as our parents did, that we vowed we weren't going to make with our kids. I see people doing it. You know, we still want to not be straight up. We need to talk straight up about sex. You know, bam, this is what happens for real. You know what I mean? Just tell the truth. Don't pretend like somebody 16 years old don't have sexual urges. Or don't pretend like they're not aware of dope and drugs and... Stop, you know, they grew up on HBO. They were exposed to more stuff than we were ever exposed to. And we still want to kind of like, I'm going to put them in this bubble and they won't know about these things if I can just keep everything in their life really controlled
and secure.
And the truth is, they already know. They already know all of it. They just need somebody to, they need to be able to talk without feeling like they're going to be attacked. They need to be able to talk without feeling like they're going to be punished for telling the truth about what they feel and what they see. So it's really, I don't know. I just feel like everything is reaching critical mass, and it's reaching it really, really fast. And we're about to see some type of a massive explosion. A lot of people think about it in terms of natural disasters and earth changes. I don't really see it that way. I think it's going to be psychic, mental, psychological consciousness shift. I think it's going to be some kind of a mass consciousness shift. And that's because we are beginning to see the futility of the ego. Them especially. They're just not going to follow the script. They're not going to follow the program. I feel sorry for parents who think they are. It's like they're not going to do it. They're not going to try to get a job in a corporation till they retire. They don't think like that. They don't have that kind of, you know. All of them want to do their thing. Talk to them. And you find that almost all of them want to create their own reality. They're not talking about, I'm going to go up and get a job at IBM. They usually have some kind of a dream or something, like your son. That's very typical of this generation. They want to make their own mark through expressing their own individuality. And I'm excited about that because with the combination of the internet giving them information, access to information beyond anything, people think of the negative side of that. But the positive side of that, to me, is that it creates a level playing field. That means a kid in the ghetto who got access to a computer has the same access to knowledge as a person that goes to Harvard. And that person in the ghetto may be a genius who actually has now access. So we don't have any idea the positive things that are being created right now that are going to reveal themselves. Because the ego loves to keep us afraid. So it's always going to bring up, somebody might be figuring out a way to make another bomb. Yeah, but somebody might be figuring out a way to come up with a cure for cancer at the level of the world, even though we know that's all done mentally and spiritually. You know what I mean? So that's what excites me. It's like that old thing of, is the glass half full, is it half empty? It's just how you want to see it. You want to see it like the world is going to hell in a handbasket, then it'll be that way for you. But I personally don't see it that way. I don't buy into all the doomsday predictions about how everything's going to end and California's going to drop off in the ocean. And, you know, it's like, nah. It's more spirit coming into this world than ever before. That's why things seem so crazy. It's so much light pouring in right now. And so much love and truth pouring in right now that is pushing up all of the ego. It's pushing up all of the insanity. It's just pushing it up. Like when you put water in a pail, a dirty pail, and all the dirt comes up to the surface and then comes over the top, and then you got a pail full of clean water. That's what's happening right now. It's so much truth coming in that we're seeing people act crazier than we've ever seen it before because it's coming out and over. But under that, we're going to see some cool stuff like we've never seen before. We're part of that. That's why we were born. That's why we were born. That's why we're here. You know, we got a much higher purpose than the stuff we focus in on. We really do. It's kind of sad to me sometimes. That's my joke. You know, it's like so many people still really think it is about a Prada bag. And you can have a Prada bag. I ain't knocking Prada bags, but that wasn't why you were born. You know, you weren't born just to have a house in the suburbs. That wasn't why you were born. It's cool. It's a cool perk. But that wasn't why you were born. When it becomes the purpose, then that's what to me you're getting lost. You know, I can have the nicest material surroundings you could imagine. That's not why I was born. And I can enjoy it, but that's not why I was born. And I'd like to have a comfortable environment, but that's not why I was born. So I'm not one of these people that's saying poverty is spiritual. I'm just saying that when my having a car becomes the reason that I get up in the morning, something is wrong. For me. That car doesn't care anything about me. That car would run over me if somebody else was driving it. I want to have real relationships. Because in the end, that's going to be what's the only thing that really matters. It's the relationships you have, not the stuff you have. Can't you see it? When you've really been helped, hasn't it been the relationships? Yeah, it's been the relationships that's come through for you. Not the stuff. If I'm hungry and someone says, hey man, come on over for dinner. I know you're having a lot tight time right now, if that was the case. And I say, hey, come on over and have dinner. It's the relationship they have with me that helped that happen. The food doesn't care about me. What's in the refrigerator doesn't care about me. The house that they have at the end doesn't care about me. The car I drove over there in doesn't care about me. What cared about me was the relationship I had with the person. That's why relationships to me are the most important thing in the world. Not the stuff. You know, that's what, you know, again, as Americans, we're in Disneyland, but sometimes we're losing sight of what really. I've seen people kill people because they ran into their car in an accident, had a fender bender. It'd kill him because you trashed my car. Or game in the game members, you step on one of their feet, shoes, and they shoot you. That's when you know the values have just totally gone crazy. Now my shoe, not having a scuff on it, is more important than your life. And that's the kind of stuff we need to take a look at there. You know, it's what's happening to us, that's what's valuable to everybody. It's not the relationship. It's all the external stuff. So I want to go back to basics. I want to go back to the real deal. And that's why I asked the universe to draw to me. It's friends and people who want to get real. I call it getting real. Because we can have the stuff. I don't have no guilt about the stuff. Yeah, I don't care. If I had a Rolls Royce and I could drive me in a Rolls Royce, big deal. I'd drive me in a Rolls Royce. I wouldn't feel guilty about it. I'd be like, cool, boy. This is interesting. You know what I mean? There's no judgment on material things. Material things are neutral. They're not bad or good. But I want the real relationship. And so if you want to get real, the people who don't want to get real, they're going to fade away. They're going to move away from you. And don't be fooled by that in-between period when it looks like there's not a lot of people around while you're making that shift. Because believe me, the new people that correspond to your new level of consciousness, they're going to show up. But it's scary in that little in-between period. And it'll sometimes seem like, wow, I'm not around the people I used to be around, but I'm also not around new people that's really exciting me either yet. And that's that scary kind of in-between period. So you might be in that, I don't know. But I know I'm in the middle of a big shift. So I figured that everybody else around me is too in some way. So I really appreciate you all having come here to this class on Tuesday, and it was all in divine order, and it lasted as long as it should, like it all does. It's all perfect, even though I might have my feelings about it one way or the other, but I have to trust that. But I still be doing my other three classes on Wednesdays and Thursdays and Sundays, and so we still got those going. Okay, I'll just put this out. Thank you.